Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for August's Nurses Club webinar. I'm very pleased to introduce you to our speaker for today, European and RSVS specialist in veterinary anesthesia and analgesia, Miguel Martinez. Thank you, Miguel. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Emma. Good afternoon, everybody. We are today here to discuss and learn a little bit about regional anesthesia of the forelimb. So I'm going to try to focus in explaining with images and in a practical way how to perform mainly ultrasound-guided nerve blocks of the forelimb, which will be useful for a number of procedures and pain management cases. So why do we want to use nerve blocks? And I had a look the other day at this paper from the British Journal of Anesthesia, the education section, where they basically do a review of the outcomes and the advantages of using regional anesthesia. So from there, and from an analysis of the evidence available mainly in humans, but a lot of it can be translated to small animals too, we know that there is an improved acute and chronic pain management when we use nerve blocks. And they also mentioned that there could be decreased morbidity and particularly anesthetic mortality. And in humans, this has not been consistently proven. However, I have some good news in this case for us because our colleague, Dr. Redondo from the University of Valencia in Spain, has just published recently in one of the anesthesia conferences results of his mortality and morbidity and anesthesia mortality and morbidity studies that actually prove that the use of nerve blocks reduces mortality pretty much to half the average mortality. So that is a great advantage. The other advantage of the use of nerve blocks is to improve gastrointestinal function and less vomiting. And this is because we are going to use a lot less of drugs that induce or make us more prone to vomiting, which is particularly opioids and other anesthetics and analgesics. There is also a reduction in the rate of infection, post-surgical infection. There is also a great moderation of the stress response, which will have detrimental secondary detrimental effects. And it is also been proven in humans that cancer patients have better outcomes when during the surgical procedures we use nerve blocks. So we can see that there is a large number of advantages in using nerve blocks, and that is why I am such an advocate of the use of these techniques nowadays. So the conclusion from this little review of advantages is that once really, and from my own experience, is that once you start using nerve blocks, there is really no way back. You try them, and then after that, you will not be able to do cases, particularly anesthesia cases, without them, because the difference is so obvious, and the case management is so much easier that you don't really want to live without them. On the right-hand side, I show you just like an initial picture of ultrasound image of the sciatic nerve, which is made of the tibial nerve and the peroneal nerve, which is one of those that you can visualize quite easily with pretty much any ultrasound machine with the correct settings. Right, so how does the local or local regional anesthesia work? Right, so first of all, what we have is the nociceptors or receptors or pain receptors in the periphery, which receive all the noxious stimuli, which could be of very many different types, chemical or thermal or mechanical, like in a surgical case. And they are transformed into an electrical signal that goes up the peripheral nerves, which is what we are going to be blocking after. And that is the transmission phase. So it's the conduction of this electrical impulse from the periphery into the spinal cord. And it's at this level where the blue arrow is, where we are in the forelimb, we are going to apply the nerve blocks to actually stop or impede the impulse to be conducted into the spine, where we will have the modulation or modulatory phase, where these signals are either amplified or sometimes suppressed in the neurons of the spinal cord. The last phase of the perception and integration of pain is occurs in the brain and the higher structures, where this is there is processing of these signals and recognition of pain in a conscious level. So what are we going to do? We are going to block this perception of pain by using local anesthetics and sometimes some other adjuvant drugs at the level of peripheral nerves. And what do we need for that? What we need is a certain equipment, which if we are going to try to explain ultrasound-guided nerve blocks mainly, one of the main things that you will have to have is an ultrasound machine, like in this case. This is one of the ultrasound machines we use in our hospital from General Electric. There is many others. It's not the newest, however, it provides excellent images and visualization. A very important thing to say is that you need to become familiar with the usage of the ultrasound and ultrasound techniques to actually use the settings, the correct settings to acquire the best possible images of the nerves and the region of the nerve. And on the right-hand side, you can see how we are positioning the probe in this case to do sciatic nerve block. And we are using a needle with an injection, a long distance injection port. And then this is the syringe with local anesthetic. And this needle can also be connected through this cable here to a peripheral nerve stimulator, which will help us sometimes confirm the location of our needle that we are seeing with the ultrasound by stimulating the nerve and getting a response distal to the nerve. In case of the sciatic nerve, usually is contraction of the semimembranous and semitendinous and the flexion of the leg. Following on with equipment, you can see that we will need a good quality ultrasound machine. Price-wise, there is a huge range, and then some of them will be obviously second-hand refurbished, which are more accessible, and others could be brand new and more expensive. However, one of the things that you definitely need is a linear probe, which you can see in the previous sequence in the previous slide. Sorry. This is a linear probe as opposed to a convex probe. The image in the on the screen, it's straight or flat as opposed to this convex image that you normally get with the convex probes. And what we are going to do normally is in plane blocks where the needle has to be completely parallel to the and in line with the probe as we position it on the patient. The other thing is that these probes, they need to have a capacity to go to at least 12 millihertz of frequency in order to have a good quality, a good definition of the picture. You can see here how we enter the needle from the right side of the screen, and at an angle of approximately 35 to 45 degrees, which is the ideal angle for visualization of needles. What type of needles are we going to use? We could use pretty much any needle as a standard. However, ultrasound needles are particularly designed to prevent damage of the nerves. And for that, they will have a blunt bevel with a much blunter angle. And also, they have very often a particular design that makes them easier to see. Some of them, they have a like an X type of pattern. I might be able to draw that. Sorry. So like a little X pattern, and that will make it much easier to see on the screen. This one in particular doesn't have the pattern, but it's still quite visible. It's a fairly thick needle, and the frequency can be adjusted to improve the depth or the definition. The higher the frequency, the more the definition, but the less penetration of the ultrasound. Therefore, like 12, 30 megahertz are able to give you like good penetration and images at depths of between 2 and 3 centimeters maximum. The needles also can be attached to a peripheral nerve stimulator. For that, the needle needs to be shielded, and that means that only the tip will conduct the tip of the needle will conduct the electrical impulse, and therefore we know that wherever there is a motor response of the limb, it means that the needle is right very close to the nerve, if the milliamperes of the impulse are very much reduced. So we normally start locating, do a gross localization of the nerve using an amperage of about 1 milliampere, and then we will turn it down gradually to down to 0.4 to refine the localization. So if we have a distinctive twitch or motor response with a current of 0.4 milliamperes, that means that we are actually in very, very close proximity of the nerve and we are okay to inject, providing the injection is easy to perform. If there is resistance, then it means that we might have punctured the nerve and therefore we need to withdraw slightly, reconfirm the twitch, and then inject again. What do we use to block the nerve? Normally, we are going to use local anesthetics on their own. Occasionally, we'll use adjuvants like corticosteroids or alpha-2 agonists to prolong the duration of the block, particularly for the management of chronic pain. What type of local anesthetics we normally use? I would say that in the majority of the surgical cases, we will want to use longer-lasting local anesthetics, and the most common one is bupivacaine at a concentration of 0.5% or 0.25%. Ropivacaine is less commonly used, but it's a very similar local anesthetic at a concentration of normally 0.5%, and it has a similar duration of action, perhaps less of a motor deficit or a less duration, less profound motor deficit. Some people will use also lidocaine, which is much shorter acting, although has the advantage that the onset of action is it's much faster, probably only 1 or 2 minutes. However, for surgical cases, considering the preparation time it takes after we do the block to get the patient into theater, there is no real advantage in using local anesthetics of short duration. And what you want really is the analgesia, then the longer lasting effect of the local anesthetic to go for as long as possible. Once we have discussed some general concepts about ultrasound-guided nerve blocks, we're going to try to focus in nerve blocks affecting the forelimb. So what are the indications of those nerve blocks? So one of them is analgesia of the forelimb distal to the site of injection. And the site of injection can be in several places, as we will see. Normally, if you do a block, if you have, let's say, surgery in the radius and ulna, you will have to do the block at some point at the level of the humerus. If you have to do surgery at the level of the humerus, then you will have to do the block at some point, either in the very proximal humerus or higher up, like a paraspinal level or similar. We will use them for surgical pain, and also we can use nerve blocks for acute or chronic pain management after trauma or cancer pain. The technical options, although today we are mainly discussing ultrasound-guided nerve blocks, are three really. We can also use only neurolocalization or neurostimulation with a peripheral nerve stimulation and an insulating needle, like I showed you before. And in many cases, you can also do nerve blocks using anatomical landmarks, is what we call a blind block, because you don't see what you're doing, but you're guessing or calculating or estimating that your needle will be in the proximity of a nerve based on anatomical landmarks. To give you an example, for instance, if we want to do a lower or a distal rhomb block, we can insert the needle to block the radial nerve around in the area where the distal third of the humerus starts on the lateral aspect of the leg and between the bellies of the biceps and the triceps. And it is quite likely that the block will be effective if we follow these landmarks. On the other side, on the medial aspect, you can localize the pulse of the brachial artery, and again around the area of where the distal third of the humerus starts, you can put your needle there and through the skin, and then inject a local anesthetic that will likely spread and desensitize the ulnar nerve, the median nerve, and the musculocutaneous nerve. In order to perform nerve blocks of the forelimb, we need to know the neuroanatomy of the brachial plexus. So the brachial plexus is composed by the nerve or made of the nerve roots of the cervical and thoracic segments C6, C7, C8 and T1. Occasionally there are small fibers coming from C5 in the cervical area and from T2 in the thoracic area. This is what makes the brachial plexus, as you can see here in the area of the axilla, in the inner aspect of the scapula. It is quite complex. It is also a very vascular area that includes the axillary artery and vein and some other smaller but substantial vessels. The nerves of less interest for us will be the subscapular, suprascapular, pectoral, axillary, and long thoracic and thoracodorsal nerves. However, we are going to be mostly interested in the musculocutaneous nerve, the ulnar nerve, the radial nerve, and the median nerve. The musculocutaneous nerve comes mainly from C6 and C7, while the ulnar, radial, and median nerve come more importantly from C8 and T1. At the level of the humerus, they will divide in singular nerves. The musculocutaneous nerve comes quite cranial, while the radial nerve and the ulnar nerve and the median nerve, they will run more in the more distal part, caudal part of the humerus, and they will separate the radial nerve going from the medial aspect into the lateral aspect of the leg at the level of the proximal third of the humerus, while the median, the musculocutaneous and the ulnar remain in the medial aspect of the limb. The first technique I want to show you, ultrasound guided, is the brachial plexus block in what we call the subscalene approach. This is the fascial area or the subfascial plane that is under the scalene muscles of the neck in close proximity to the jugular vein. The indication for the use of the subscalene approach and the brachial plexus block will be four limb amputations, humeral fractures, nerve sheath tumors, and also neuropathic pain affecting the whole limb. When we do four limb amputation, we have to bear in mind that when we do the subscalene approach, the more proximal part or more dorsal part of the scapula and the skin in that area will be not desensitized. But the rest of the limb will be, and it will be very effective in the main for this type of surgery. If you wanted a whole desensitization, you would have to do what we call a paravertebral block at the level of the brachial plexus, which is technically a lot more complex and less likely to be effective because of the anatomy and the less obvious ultrasound window. However, the subscalene approach, as you will see, it's fairly easy to perform and the landmarks are fairly clear. So, as you could see in the previous image, we're going to position the patient in lateral recumbency with the affected limb or the limb we are going to block on the uppermost side, with the limb pulled backwards. We are going to position the probe just cranial to the scapulohumeral joint. Perhaps in the previous slide, you can see that a little bit better. And then the needle will be positioned in line with the probe and go from cranial to caudal. It is very important that we are comfortable when we do nerve blocks. So for me, it is important to be in front of the ultrasound machine so we can manipulate all the equipment without having to turn to one side or the other and have an uncomfortable position. For this block, it will be also quite likely necessary that an assistant will help hold the leg for you. So the dog is in lateral recumbency and we pull the leg back. Sometimes it is helpful, as you can see in this image, to put a sandbag or something solid and bulky under the neck and the shoulder on the other side to lift and expose the area a little bit more. As you can see here, the probe in the subscalene approach is right in front of the shoulder and the needle goes through the skin in line with it from cranial to caudal. On the screen, in this particular case, the needle will come from the left of the screen to the right with this Doppler image on the right side of the screen, you can see there the axillary artery. And in the fascial plane, you can see this hyperechoic area with hypoechoic dots. The hypoechoic dots are the nerve roots of C8 and T1 in what we call the honeycomb image. You will see that better in the next photograph. You can see it here, the axillary artery. There is no Doppler now. There is the axillary artery. And then you can see the honeycomb. If there's like an almond size and shape area of hyperechoic signal with hypoechoic dots. Okay. Can we just see this? And then we have C7. We have C7 here, and it moves back now. And if we go more cranially, we have C6. So the nerves did normally look hypoechoic with a hyperechoic rim. The probe will be parallel to the spine and in front of the first rib. And the axillary artery will be the main landmark here. So the needle will come from the left of the screen to the right. What do we use? We will use local anesthetic 0.2 to 0.4 mils per kilo of bupivacaine at 0.5% concentration. All right. The next technique is the proximal rhomb block, which we will do at the level of the proximal humerus. Okay. So at this point, in the proximal humerus, we have the suprascapular nerve there, which is we are not going to desensitize, but a little bit farther down, we have the radial nerve, the ulnar nerve, the musculocutaneous nerve, and the median nerve, all of them in the medial aspect of the humerus. And we are going to enter from this position to block them in one point, one single insertion of the needle and injection in two different sides. You can see here how the dog is in lateral recumbency with the affected limb lowermost. And then from the medial aspect, we put the probe, the linear probe, you can see there. And the needle is entering from cranial to caudal. So in the screen, you will see this coming from the left to the right. The indications will be humeral condyle fractures, radius and ulnar fractures, and distal to the radius and ulna, like carpal fractures or toe fractures and other problems. We also use this sometimes for the management of chronic pain and neuropathic pain affecting the distal forelimb. For that, we will add to the local anesthetic also normally corticosteroids or medetomidine or dexmedetomidine. This is the ultrasound image of the proximal rhomb block, where you can see the axillary artery here. And also you can see on this part, the ulnar nerve and the median nerve. The radial nerve, although it's difficult to see, it is somewhere here in this bleb of local anesthetic. And the musculocutaneous nerve, although there is a little bit of acoustic shadow, is usually here. So the needle comes from this side, and then we put local anesthetic in this area, as you can see there in the bleb. And we can put also, then we draw the needle a little bit and come here in front, right in front of the axillary artery, and put local anesthetic around the musculocutaneous nerve. Sorry, I apologize. I just had a little emergency. We'll just carry on. Like I said, we just do a single needle puncture with two injection sites. The radial nerve is medial when we do this at this level. Okay, so we do the medial approach for all four nerves, right? And the volume required is usually quite small. I would say that normally, for even for a large dog, you will never use volumes higher than 3 or 4 mils in total. And for smaller dogs, maybe 1 or 2 mils will be sufficient. We need to be very careful, as you can see, with the axillary or brachial artery. The distal rim block is the third block we are going to discuss today, and the block will be done in the distal third of the humerus. Right. So at this point, we have the radial nerve in the lateral aspect between the bellies of the biceps and the triceps, and we have the ulnar, the musculocutaneous, and the median nerve very close together but separated on the medial aspect, and then dividing in these directions after. So this is a 2-point block instead of a 1-point block, and the approach has to be from the lateral aspect, caudal lateral, and from the medial aspect, mediolateral, sorry, caudomedial. The indications of this will be for any surgery below the elbow, so radiosternal fracture and carpal fractures, and also for the management of chronic neuropathy and neuropathic pain. So I wouldn't use this block for something like an elbow fracture, because it will not provide the sensitization of the elbow properly. You can see in the image here how we are positioning the probe in the lateral aspect, and the radial nerve will be desensitized like that. I will show you a video in just a minute. The distal rim block also, like I said, two injection sites, and then in the medial aspect and from caudal also, we will do the ulnar, medium, and musculocutaneous. This is the ultrasound image that you acquire, where you can see the brachial artery again, like in the proximal block, and then you have an area where you find both together the ulnar and median nerve, and then on this side you find the musculocutaneous nerve slightly separated. This area again is quite small in size, so the volumes are required for the blockade are quite small, between 0.5 and 1 mils per side, so a total of 1 to 2 mils, including medial and lateral aspects. This is the end of the lecture. However, I want to show you now some videos. So one of them is video one, is a nerve block of the radial nerve in the distal rim area. So you can see the humerus here as a reference, and then the needle approaches from underneath, and you can see distinctively the I'll play it again. You can see distinctively the hypoechoic area with hyperechoic rim of the radial nerve. So the needle will come from there, and then we inject the local anesthetic, which we see as a hypoechoic bleb. Okay. The second video is the medial approach to the ulnar, median, and musculocutaneous nerve. In this case, you can see the brachial artery pulsating there. And then, like I said before, we just advance the needle beyond the brachial artery, and we have the ulnar and the median nerve there. And there is also, just before, is the musculocutaneous nerve in this area. So you can see how the needle was withdrawing to go to that area also. However, as soon as you put a little bit of volume, then the whole area will be desensitized quite easily. The important thing always when there is a vascular structure is to draw back and make sure that we don't have any blood. It would be fatal, or really quite a bad complication, to inject in local anesthetic into an artery. It could lead to sudden arrhythmias and also seizures, so obviously it's not recommended. In order to gain like an in-depth knowledge of these nerve blocks, I would like to advise you to read or to have a look at these references, these regional anesthesia techniques, of the thoracic limb and the thorax in small animals. It's a description, in-depth description by doctors Portela, Verdier, and Otero from the University of Buenos Aires and Florida. And this is in the Veterinary Journal. They also have a book called Regional Anesthesia of Companion Animals, which has been recently translated from Spanish into English, and which I would advise you to have a look at because it contains lots of images and it will be the beginning of your learning curve or very, very advanced nerve blocks, really. Thank you very much. I think this is it for today, and I would be more than happy to take any questions. Thank you.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Miguel for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.